1985 was the Avengers and Fantastic Four annual that crossed over. And it's like Kree and Skrulls, I think.
No, I never have covered that one. But that would be a fun one because that's the one that was told in both annuals, but from the other point of view, right?
Yeah, and then the other one was, and I love these as a kid, but I've never reread them yet, so I'm about to. The other one was, well, actually, no, I think that one was in 1987. The other one's in 1985, and it's Avengers and West Coast, and it's the one with Silver Surfer in both, and the Collector.
Oh, I don't know if I remember
that. You guys never covered those either? Oh, yeah, it's two annuals, one in West Coast, one in Avengers, and Collector and the other guy are having a competition. And the Silver Surfer's involved, too.
David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 466. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down the bunker and locked in for a new era of Marvel Noise. Call it Marvel Noise 4.0. With me, as always, are WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit. And we've got Phil with us, too. It's like an episode of Indie Noise.
Are we going to explode for being on the same call, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a snuffleupagus dynamic.
Oh, brew.
So why is this a new era? Because Derek Coward's delightful Deliberate Noise Network has closed up shop, and we've taken control of the servers and the website. We control the vertical and the horizontal. On the Marvel Noise
Podcast.
About
control, Super Steve.
Remember the old vertical hold on the old TVs? You had to like put the, there would be like a screw in the back. Oh man, those were nightmare. You had to,
or the picture would crawl. It would just scroll up or scroll down.
You could slow the scroll down, but like if you had to try to catch it right at the, like a really long screwdriver. On the Marvel Noise Podcast, we talk all things Marvel. Comics, toys, games, television, movies, and the occasional prose novel, thanks to Andrew. You can listen to or download shows over on marvelnoise.com. We promise it's back up and running, and you get new episode announcements and give us feedback on our social media pages. All right, did I miss anything, Andrew?
I think that's it. I mean, Kevin sometimes gives out our blue sky handle.
Marvel ICBN Noise.
Yes, but I know we have a lot of Facebook friends and all that. Yeah, check out, the website should be running. We are theoretically updating to iTunes, so, and maybe someday we'll be debuting on Spotify even.
Yeah, maybe other places. The sky's the limit.
If you're having trouble getting the podcast other than on marvelnoise.com, let us know, because this is all new to us. Working on the behind the scenes stuff.
Are we selling episodes for $2?
Just Indie
it's
Comic Book
2007.
Noise. Those episodes are gold. Indie Comic Book Noise is our other podcast, our sister show, where we talk about the indie books that we're digging. And we have kept that one afloat too.
Yes, fingers crossed, everybody.
Yeah, it's taking a little longer to come back, but it will be back.
Yeah. Enjoy it. While it's there, and hopefully it will be going on forever. But, you know, technical stuff. You know, none of us are, you know, computer whizzes.
I thought Kevin was, but that's
not, not after all this stuff either, are we going to be whizzes?
We're going to be the wizard.
What about the wizard?
Wingless wizard.
You chose a good guy, Kevin.
Oh, is that what you were trying to do?
Okay. Yeah, the wizard.
I'm going to put on my yellow costume and call myself the wizard.
All right, so how did we rope Phil into taking time away from his otherwise busy life to come on to an episode of Marvel Noise and slum with us here instead of talking about things that are bathing suits usually cover, and blood and guts and horror books and stuff over on Indie Noise, where we usually keep him entertained. Well, we got Phil on because we wanted to talk about one of the Marvel crossovers that just occurred.
Or two of them, no?
Yeah. Well, that was part of the whole crossover, what do you say, conceit, so to speak. We, last year, was it? Or earlier this year, had the Deadpool Batman set of crossovers where the big two, Marvel and the Distinguished Competition, decided that the only way they could really release a crossover book these days, it used to be like, you know, they would like alternate which publishing company did the crossover, things along those lines. Well, this time they decided, well, we're just each going to put out a Batman Deadpool book.
And, I think it's a good way.
I think it ended up being great with all the backups in the back, with where they peppered in some other crossovers and stuff just for fun. And that way you're all doing it in-house with the in-house talent, and you get to see each publishing house's version of the crossover. And we were lucky enough to have Phil on to talk about those books too. So now we've got Spider-Man and Superman. Or is it Superman and Spider-Man?
I prefer the Ring of Superman and Spider-Man myself.
Yeah. Is that because of the classic connotations?
Because I'm more of a DC guy.
Okay.
I think the hyphen should come second.
You know, I was going to make a joke about Batman and in Internet 2.0 earlier. Because that was a story.
I just realized I paid two different prices for these comic books. So
of course you did.
I did not realize. I thought they were the same price, but I paid a dollar extra.
DC was more expensive last time. Yeah. I think, too.
They had one page less of story than the Marvel one.
Really?
And made it up with a pinup. The DC book was 65 pages of stories and a pinup, and the Marvel was 66 pages of stories.
I don't know if it's because I got one of the variants of the DC. I got the Spider-Ham and Crypto one.
No, I think they were all priced like that, I'm pretty sure.
Chrissy Zulo one she did with those two.
That must be good.
Yeah, I liked it. The guy at the shop said it was the same price, so I was like, sure. Huh. But I didn't realize it was extra dollar. Well, that one came out first, right? So
yes.
I didn't know what the Marvel one was going to cost. I learned at the cash register, boys, or once after what I was doing. Yeah.
The money left his account and he didn't have it till later.
The DC version was written by Mark Waid, at least the main 24-page primary tale, with art by George Jimenez.
I like the art. Can I say that?
Yeah, the art was good.
Story, maybe less so.
Yeah.
Well, the story did have some nice moments in it, I thought.
It did. It wasn't without nice moments, but nice moments don't necessarily make a story, per se.
Now, I don't have the copies in front of me. Is this the one where they're trapped underground at first?
No. That's the Marvel one. Okay.
This is the one they're trapped under. I just want a moratorium on Spider-Man.
Okay, yeah, I was confused there.
Lifting up pieces of machinery.
This one I didn't like as much either. Yeah.
It just feels like a story cheat. Like that's one of his famous moments. So we'll just homage it if we need something to do. And I generally don't enjoy that part of it.
That's what I thought was kind of we'll talk about it when we get there, but kind of cute about the Marvel one where it kind of presented almost that scenario, but they completely avoided going there, which was clever, I thought. What, the DC one? Nope, Spidey has to lift the stuff, and he does. And it's a page turn and everything.
I mean, I'm sure if you're part of the creative team, you wanted, you know, like, that's an iconic moment, but as a reader, I feel like you needed some, like the other one, like a twist or some reason to give me that moment again.
I like the backup stories better than the main tale especially visually getting to see like Jim Lee do sequentials, even though it was a silly story that combined Mary Jane and Lois Lane, it more seemed just an excuse for Jim Lee to draw Gambit again in a big double page spread. But it was
a Gambit fan. I love that part of the story when Gambit shows up, you know, and they didn't show him too much or anything, and he just solves the problem, you know, like
he sure did.
I admit,
and that surprised me because I didn't expect that, you know.
Especially X-Men is fun for me. That was a fun, I mean, I was not expecting it either, Phil. No. You think
like,
Jim
I would
Lee,
have expected a different character or something, you know? But yeah, it's awesome that they used Gambit.
And they also played around with Superman, Spider-Man as a team up by doing like other versions of Superman and Spider-Man. Like you got Superboy Prime and Spider-Man, you got Superboy and Spider-Man 2099. Like they gave us some of those and chemistry was there with some of that, like Spidey and Superboy Prime is, I thought had some pretty funny stuff. Cause I guess right now I'm a little, biased to enjoying Superboy Prime's, character right now. Cause they're kind of doing a fun thing with him in the main, Action Comics book, but he's the one who's like a reader of comics and knows he's Spider-Gwen. Oh, not Spider-Gwen, the other one. What do they call it?
He came
Gwenpool.
From
he's Gwenpool.
The real world, I believe, right?
Like Gwenpool.
His story. Yeah.
I guess Gwenpool is less annoying, though.
That's debatable. Depends on who's writing Superboy Prime.
I feel like there's hate groups out there for Superboy Prime. I don't think there's hate groups. Well, maybe there's hate groups out there for Gwenpool, but that's because, you know.
I lead it
because they don't get
I
it.
I think that was from entirely different.
I think that's
reason.
From Superboy Prime from a long time ago when they made him kind of intentionally jerky. I thought,
that's what I mean.
Was a bit, and then I thought they retreated from that bit, so that it made it a bit
and
more
he's
sense.
Very much, and he's redeemed himself a lot in the last couple of years. He's been part of like some crossovers and stuff, and he really like kind of saved the day here and there, you know.
And then having Sean Murphy do the art on the Superboy Spider-Man 2099 five-pager was cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these backups, these additional crossovers, were like four or five pages. But the DC one had two longer ones, an eight-pager, the Superboy Prime Amazing Spider-Man one, and a nine-pager in the Lois and MJ. And conversely, the Marvel one had more stories, because they kept them at the five pagers kind of all the way through and only had one eight pager. So they just used their pages differently. And like I said, Marvel ended up with one more page of story on top of it.
Like the Deadpool Batman, lots of old timers brought back for these things, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if that was a deliberate appeal, but you know, Christopher Priest, I mean, I can't remember the last comic of his I read. So
you're not reading that long run of Vampirella?
Yeah, he's been doing Vampirella for Dynamite. They got Matt Fraction on one of them.
Reading or submitting old scripts he wrote 30 years.
Jeff Lemire wrote one. Greg Rucker wrote one, and Gail Simone too. So, did I say that Tom King wrote the Jim Lee one for Lois and MJ? So that's a good stable of writers, and with Mark Wade writing the main story.
Just, big names for this crossover made it fun. And having short stories is a fun way to see, like we were talking about Gambit with Jim Lee and, you know, Fraction and Lieber returning with Jimmy Olsen and that sort of thing.
Did you get the point of pairing up Power Girl and Punisher?
That was my favorite story in the book.
Gail Simone with Baleen Ortega doing the art did a five-page Power Girl Punisher story, and it seemed an odd pairing until you realize who the creator of both characters is. It was a Jerry Conway tribute.
You know what I never knew until recently? That Wally Wood helped invent Power Girl.
Yeah, I've got that issue, too. the first Power Girl issue. I've had it since I was a kid. It was, for some reason, it didn't burn up in the fire. It was in another spot when I was 10 and lost most of my comics, except for the Spider-Man number one, that, and a couple other things that were just, must have been like, I had them out because I was reading them or whatever. But it's got the big old window of on her chest right from the get-go. It's so Hollywood.
I was going to one day show you pictures of Power Girl and see if you can guess who drew it, but obviously you would have guessed right away.
Oh, just because
since you had
for
it, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So I wasn't sure if... I could tell a Wally Wood female face from like 10 clicks.
Well, I was going to try and crop it a little different just so it would be a little harder to tell, but...
He drew beautiful female faces and handsome male...
Well, just going to send you the shot the from the neck down.
All right, so...
that was probably my favorite one, the Power Girl and Punisher. I kind of want to read a book with them dating now, you know, by the end of it.
So on the Spider-Man-Superman side, with Marvel's book, we had Brad Meltzer writing the 27-page primary story with art by Pepe Larraz, who I think did a real nice job. I felt like the art was really smooth and the storytelling was... pretty sharp for something that has a lot of it taking place trapped underground.
Yeah, I was pleased. I thought this one, for my money, flowed a little bit better and had, I liked this story a bit better, but it was touching a lot of the same notes of who the characters are, because they both spend time as their own, you know, Clark Kent and Peter Parker and Superman and Spider-Man.
I really liked the risk that Meltzer took of starting the story with them in the trap. I mean, like, you know how the old Batman Bam Pow TV show was always like two-parters with the, you get stuck in the trap or whatever, and then you'd cliffhanger thing and you'd see the resolution the next issue or the next episode, same bat time, same bat channel. This is that second episode. This is the second issue in some ways where you step in and they're trapped and they've already gotten here and we don't get any setup. We don't get any how they meet, how they're going to get these two characters together. They've been together. They've been on an adventure. Something bad happened. They're stuck here and now they're dealing with it. And they're, you know, needling each other a little bit with their verbiage back and forth. And yet they're supporting each other. You're getting to see what kind of men both these guys are. I felt like Meltzer did a really nice job with reducing the environment to that small space to begin with and just have them already comfortable with doing a back and forth without having to worry about any kind of setup and meeting.
I agree, especially because for most of us, we'd read the first. This is the second one that came out.
Yeah.
So we didn't need two contrived meetings to hook them up with it.
And too. even with
smart
that,
having it come second,
even with that big intro exposition missing, it's still a longer story than the DC one too, which is wild.
Well, I think they wanted the character moments, like I said, which completely makes sense, especially for, I feel Brad would want more of that than some intricate plot for how they get out of the trap type of thing. You know what I mean? That's not what he's there for. You're there to write because you like Clark Kent and Peter Parker and all their supporting cast.
And you got that feel like Meltzer expressed that through this piece. Like it felt like Meltzer was having fun and bringing us along on it. He's a good writer.
Yeah, no complaints. I enjoyed this. Not to be a Marvel homer, but I guess I am, but this one was my preferred one. I love that when we get to the next story, I love the Spider-Man noir, Superman putting it back in time. And they also do Marcos Martin. Is he the artist on that one? No.
Yeah. What a great idea, right? Him
and
doing
he does the homage to this Amazing Fantasy 15 cover, but with Superman. Because remember, Superman's not flying. He's leaping. So he has the bad guy in that same position with his arm up like he's holding on. I mean, he doesn't have the web, but it's a complete AF-15 cover right in the middle of it.
At first I was thinking Spider-Man Noir with, like, I don't want, that's stupid. And then I look and see that it's Martine and that it's a period piece. And it's like, that's awesome. Totally clever. Because the Superman they use is like the Fleischer era animation Superman with the black behind the red S. I mean, that's a nice touch. It's really cool.
And Joe Kelly for the next one, who I would not have, you know, you think of Deadpool or whatever. So it's funny, does a sweet kind of Gwen Stacy, Lana Lang sort of.
Yeah, my problem with it was I really have a hard time with Umberto Ramos's figure work and faces, drawing human things. He draws monsters and, you know, masked characters and armored characters and all that stuff just fine. But you get to regular people and regular faces, and it's disturbing. It's not even like I just have to, like, read the story and go. It's like, it's disturbing. Like, the eyes don't line up, and it's like the face. Oh man, it bothers me. So having this otherwise sweet story with Gwen and Lana really gets ruined for me by the visual presentation, unfortunately.
I think we've talked about Ramos before on both shows, strangely enough. So, But then we get Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. So a DC story slipped in the middle.
I thought it was Image this Geiger.
The best story out of everything I found.
I didn't think DC. I thought Geiger. This is the Geiger team.
Now, yeah.
You're not reading Geiger? Oh, that's a good book. From
I like Geiger.
All right. Yeah, I like this one too, Phil. And because it's a thing story when it's kind of not billed as one.
And it has so much heart into it. Like the way Superman grabs, is it the Hulk he's against? Yeah. Grabs his face, you know, to calm him down. Like I just thought it was very powerful that moment. Just seeing the thing, see that and realize it, you know?
Yep.
Smart to play to Frank's, you know, having all those faces and everything in the superhero. You know, a lot of times there's masks or whatever, but he has all those expressive faces, I thought, that worked well in the story, and they, you know, designed it around that.
That story in the credit page of all the backups that precede all the backups and kind of act as a bridge between the main story and the back matter. Bill this story as Mysterio versus Superman featuring the Thing. And when I read it, I'm like, no, this is a Thing story with Superman. But
in the Legion of Superheroes, which is why Phil really likes it. He just won't admit it.
No, I like the Legion. I'm a big Legion fan. But yeah, for me, it was just the way Thing, just like, I was glad that it was a Thing story mostly, really.
Yeah.
Just him going up to Bruce after, you know, and, wanting to talk about everything. And I don't know. I just thought it had a lot of heart, that story.
For sure. Wheezy and Todd Knock, do a Steel and Hobgoblin story, which I'm not really interested in the Steel character at all, but it was fun to, it's always fun to see Todd Knock's art.
I was going to say, I don't know much about Steel, but I thought Knock drew him to look pretty fun. Almost, you know, Thor meets Silver Surfer meets Iron Man type of mashup. I was like, it looks really cool. Like, I don't know. I guess I don't think of Todd Knock in DC characters a lot.
Exactly. Seeing Phil Noto do Supergirl and Spider-Gwen was a good choice, even though the story wasn't anything particularly special.
No, but as someone who hates Spider-Gwen like me, I actually kind of enjoyed it a bit.
Wow. Nice.
I like Phil Noto, and I like that I feel like he makes Supergirl a little bit older.
Yep.
than sometimes she's depicted, which I kind of think is a cool choice. I mean, there's no wrong. Like, you can have her be whatever age the story needs her to be, but that was kind of nice. Like, I always like his artwork, and have a little bit older Supergirl was pretty cool.
And then we get Bendis returning to Marvel for a story with his Miles Morales Spider-Man and Superman with Sarah Pichelli art. After that is an oddly titled, it's like they didn't want to give away how great it was going to be. They call it Symbiotes in Metropolis by Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman. And it's basically a Wonder Woman and Jane Foster Thor story, which was a lot of fun in five pages.
And remember, he did that Superbia comic for Boom or some indie book way back when he used to do interiors all the time. It's kind of nice to see him. I mean, it's only five pages, but
yep,
I do like seeing him return to not just doing covers. Not that the covers aren't great, but there's something cool about seeing him working his, and plus they made sure to feature, you know, Wonder Woman and Supergirl and start like all the glamorous kind of figures that lend himself to the way he draws.
Definitely cool. And then just to make sure that they didn't, you know, that they exceeded DC on the page count story-wise, they throw in a two-pager at the very end with Spider-Man and Superman, just kind of like as a coda. And it is written by Jeff Loeb with art by Jimmy Chung.
You think I'd be all over? I don't know. I mean, it's two pages, so what are you going to do? But it just... I don't know. It didn't feel earned, I guess, or whatever. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like they want to wallow in Spider-Man's history a little bit and sort of not earn it in the same way.
Yeah, only two pages, though, so I felt like it wasn't too much of a, you know, sitting, you know, Spider-Man sitting up on top of the bridge thinking about Gwen Stacy, and Superman flies by. And Superman's the, you know, he's a good for a good pick-me-up, right? He's a turn that frown upside down kind of guy. And he kind of explains what happened. Spider-Man does at that bridge, and Superman gives him his thoughts before he flies off. And it's kind of one of those contrasting Marvel and DC's worlds where farm boy, Kansas boy of Superman can give the big city kid a pep talk. With his simpler frame of mind, you know?
It's like blow hot and cold on low. Some things I like and some I don't.
Ditto.
Which I guess is fair, you know, but ditto. Yeah, so it was a...
You don't like Wolverine and Sabretooth fighting as evolved dogs or whatever the hell they were? That was a pretty bad Jeff Loeb story in Wolverine, although... The art was, who was that guy who did the art at that time? He was that painter-y.
Bianchi or something?
What's that?
Simone Bianchi?
Yeah, it was Bianchi. I was going to say Delotto, but I'm like, it wasn't Delotto, it was Bianchi. Absolutely. I knew Kevin would remember.
Yeah, trying to forget still.
Yeah, I'm not a big Bianchi fan.
I mean, the art's fine. It's just that story. I'm like,
yeah,
you know.
So we survived another round of Marvel DC crossovers. And
so who's like, next?
Like we did for the Batman Deadpool crossover, we liked the Marvel one better.
This one, last time I liked the DC one better. This time I liked the Marvel one better.
Oh, was it? I don't know. I might have to go back to the
tape. Yeah, I think last time, I'm pretty sure last time we all liked the DC one better. I could be wrong.
What? No, I got to go back to the tape now. I don't remember it that way at all.
Next
has to be Wonder Woman and someone, right? That's probably their next one, I'm guessing.
And Captain Marvel? Oy.
Yeah, probably something like that, yeah. Or maybe Storm would be cool.
I like these better than the Batman Deadpool. I gave those away. I'm Yeah, so I thought this was more successful for my taste than that one.
Yeah, if I had to pick, I'd prefer these Superman Spider-Mans over the Deadpool Batmans for sure.
Cool. It was just that, I know we talked about it at the time, but just such a random choice that.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, I don't know who I would have picked in lieu of, but I can think of a few just off the top of my head.
Well, it's because they went with their two most popular characters, right? That's why.
Yep.
It's as much as we believe it, Deadpool is, you know, the Marvel person that a lot of the youngins like, right?
Yeah, but then they get all the old people to come back and write.
Yeah, that's because they just want to do Batman.
All right, and I think I heard they
have to go pick up Christopher Priest.
I heard they're also collecting these in two trade paperbacks. One's going to have the main stories, and the other one's going to have all the backups or something like that. Or one's just going to be all the Marvel stuff, and one's going to be all the DC stuff, something like that.
What it's going to be is the Marvel DC, like they're separate. Yeah, the one will be the Marvel stuff, one will be the DC stuff, and then they have the stuff that was only on the Marvel Unlimited. You know those short stories they did.
Yeah, those
are going to be added to them.
So Aquaman and the shark guy.
Yeah.
And Thor and Captain Marvel. That was good.
That was
good. Oh, sorry, Shazam.
Don't say that.
I don't have that one.
You'll turn into.
No, I have to say it backwards.
It's a little plick. All right, what do you guys been reading? Anything good? Because of how much I like Umberto Ramos's art, I am saddled with his visual interpretation on the Fantastic Four series.
Didn't we roast him on that cover that came out?
Teaser cover? You guys did a number.
So Ryan North.
Sorry, fans out there. We really did. Go on. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, Ryan North is still the writer on Fantastic Four, but they have just had one of their. I hazard to say it's the longest arc yet in Ryan North's book, even the previous series of FF, because the previous one was a lot of done-in-ones, and this was a 5-issue storyline that went from issue 6 to 10, which was called The Invincible Woman, and suggested by the cover art that, like, Malice Sue was back. And it started off okay. You know, fighting off an interdimensional invasion with like a clever tactic, then getting out from under the wizard's grasp. He took control of every robot in the Baxter building. And so like Roberta and Herbie and all the tentacles and all the everything are all fighting the FF and everything. But then they get a distress signal that they determine is coming from Galactus in some far off spot. And they decide they're going to go, investigate and help him or whatever. So then there was this kind of cool, few different scenes, where the Fantastic Four are making arrangements with other characters in the Marvel universe to watch over, Alicia and the kids, just in case things go sideways, because they're going to be off world. And you get some of the usual crew, the Wolverines and the Wyatt Wingfoots and all that. But Sue goes to the Black Cat, Felicia. And at first I was like, for real? But the character moments between them, chatting back and forth, really felt genuine to me. Like, these two have become good friends since that interaction they had. I think it was in the previous series, I want to say, or maybe earlier in this one, I forget which, but where the Black Cat was stealing something from the Baxter building and whatever. So now she's, you know, in the Fantastic Four's supporting cast world, which is funny because she's kind of been shoehorned into a lot of areas of the Marvel Universe, from the Avengers to, you know, the Scarlet Witch being Sorcerer Supreme to everything else. But then everything goes off the rails, and you'll be able to understand my anguish, I think. They get this Super Sue, the invincible woman from deep space. She's killing Galactus and using him as bait. And this duplicate Sue is not from an alternate reality. Oh, no. It turns out that she's from a duplicate Earth, not just the geography, but every person and every decision in history that led to the history mirroring ours happened. And Sue became the invincible woman there. Well, first she was in the Invisible Girl, but she and Reed determined that if she can bend light to make things invisible, then she can probably control any kind of energy. She can harness and master, like, everything in the energy spectrum. So she's, like, basically God. And this duplicate Earth, it's not the High Evolutionary's counter-Earth. Oh, no. It's an Earth that exists because outer space is now so large, because after that Judgment War thing, they unlocked that whole other big part of space that was cut off from our universe previously. And because space is so big now that the probability of things that are impossible to exist, like in randomness, now doesn't exist as, it doesn't have the threshold it once had. So just because the universe is so large that randomly another planet evolved exactly like ours, with the people exactly the same who made all the right same decisions up until this point when Stu had a bad dream and accidentally killed everybody on the planet because of her control of energy. And then she lobotomized herself to feel no remorse about it. I mean, I vehemently dislike this arc. Even if some of the character moments were good and the storytelling was okay. Just the whole idea. They completely ignore the fact from, like, Fantastic Four 400 that Sue's powers come from her siphoning, like where her force fields come from, siphoning energy from the dimensional plane that the Celestials come from. That's why she was able to hurt the Celestials. And this ignores that and says that it isn't, she doesn't just control force fields. She controls everything, basically. Sue's like a favorite of mine from when I was a little kid, for one reason or another. And this just seemed like fan fiction. It was really, really bad. Really bothered me. And not, and visually too, because it's Umberto Ramos.
Well, that was going to be your point, Steve, was that watching him draw Malice was just not...
Oh, God. Yeah.
Not what you wanted to see.
Well, on the bright side, we were spared, you know, the Malice coming back every 5 years and doing her thing again. It wasn't Malice. It was this Sue. And, oh, jeez. So then issue 11's back to being done in ones. I'm not sure if it's just to be a palate cleanser from the five-issue arc that preceded it, but it had fill-in art by Pat Boutin and Sergi Lapointe. I didn't really care for their art. Where a new future foundation is created, which maybe this one will actually last into the future. We'll see. But I don't know. This was a bad bump in the road for the FF, and I really didn't like the Emperor Doom stuff so much. So Ryan North is on notice.
Hear that, North? You're on notice.
Hey, that's what I said.
I like Sue too. I remember I started that. I think Mark Waid did the mini series with her as the super spy or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I just kind of faded on it. I don't know why. I think if sometimes when you like the characters, you really have a kind of narrow band of what you think is the right way to go about it. You know what I mean?
One of the
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. One of the big storylines I read and enjoyed as a kid when it was a multi-issue epic was in Fantastic Four when I was first reading it, was the whole Brute from the Counter-Earth who was the substitute Reed, where while Reed was banished in the negative zone eating the barbecued bat on the asteroid floating there, trapped in his undies. And the Brute was acting as Reed, and Stu was slowly figuring it out, but they did scenes where, like, they were, you know, coming out of the bedroom together, and you just got this sense that Sue was really, you know, being tricked here. And then when it finally came to the point where it was all revealed, and then she had to fight for her life, and then got chucked out the window of the Baxter Building. But fortunately, it was the era where the Impossible Man and Tigra and Thundra all lived at the Baxter Building as they were trying to assimilate to our world. And Impy was able to turn into some big flying thing and catch Sue and rescue her. But it was just like such a crazy storyline. And Sue was so duped and then had to, you know, man up and fight back on her own that I don't know. It made its impact on me as a kid. It's like, no, not Sue.
Yeah, I mean, she's my favorite character of the Fantastic Four. I know the Thing is traditionally, but I always like Sue and then the Thing.
Nice. Me too.
And then Mr. Fantastic and then the Human Torch way, way down after, like, Herbie and the Mailman and the Robot Receptionist and Wyatt Wingfoot. And all them other characters. Because, you know, you had to pick Spidey or the Human Torch back in the day, Steve. You couldn't like both of them. I was Team Spidey.
Mortal Thor is still good. I know I've been, like, talking up every issue, but the 10th one came out, Al Ewing, with Pascal Ferry art, Alex Ross covers. And you know how it's been, like, a villain of the month versus mortal, no powers and no memory of being Thor. You had the Eel in issue 6, Mr. Hyde in 7. Issue 8 was that fill-in with the Enchantress's arrow being shot through space. And then the Radioactive Man in 9. And then in issue 10, it's the Gray Gargoyle. It's like high stakes, really dangerous, with the gargoyle's lethal power, especially against someone without powers. Very suspenseful, and it's really good comic booking. Really fun. Even though I'm no fan of Pascal Ferry on Thor, it's still been a great book.
I have to keep on talking about it until everyone's buying it. Like I see awards go by and all these different things, and I'm like,
one of these issues
compared
has to be
other things that are more successful or more well known. I'm like, people need to get on this Immortal Thor.
I do like the Gray Gargoyle. Always seemed like a fun bad guy. Like a really great.
I think he was in one of my first Hulk issues I read, where like the Hulk is like sort of hanging over him and he's maybe on the ground putting his arm up in the air.
You know, against a regular human, it's really like, you know, the chase and the danger. It almost is like back when they had like Psylocke without powers, Betsy being chased by Sabretooth in the X-Men mansion. It has that kind of suspense where they're like, they're in an environment and they're chasing around. Well, I don't mind spoiling it, actually. Thor is trying to get to the Roxxon headquarter guy, the guy who's the Minotaur. But he doesn't remember Thor either. And doesn't know who Thor is. And he's trying to get upstairs in the building. And between him and the penthouse office is the Gray Gargoyle. Really fun.
You know what else might be fun? You know who does a lot of adventure? Indiana Jones. Did you see that the Further Adventures is coming out in these, looks like leather deluxe hardcovers?
I only found out because Phil told me about it.
I don't need leather deluxe, but some of those comics were a lot of fun. Especially those first two issues that were completely an original story written and drawn by Byrne with, I think, Terry Austin inks, if I'm not mistaken, at least on the covers.
You mean the Marvel Super Specials?
No. The first two issues of Further Adventures was an all-new story of,
they launched Byrne.
And then there were some Kerry Gamille art issues. Those were good. And a Gene Day issue.
What I don't get is this is right when I'm buying comics. I like Indiana Jones. And I have like next to, except for the movie stuff, I don't remember this series at all. I must have bought an ish, unless it just somehow, I don't know how I would have missed it, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I've got them all up until I stopped reading comics, which was a few issues before the series ended in 85.
You know what this reminds me of? Like those, is it James Bond comics or?
Yeah, they did a bunch of those.
Yeah, it's like extra things. You've seen all the movies, you've done all the stuff, and then all of a sudden you find out, wait, there's extra stuff? Like, they can do some goofball adventures, you know, they're sort of doing continuity, but not.
Yeah. Fun. I don't know if I would recommend to anyone to spend top dollar on the most deluxe version of this material. There were some later issues that were drawn by Steve Ditko, and it's, you know, early 80s Steve Ditko. And it was basically because here's a guy who's not a superhero, and there's no dark that, like, it was the perfect thing to give Ditko because of his reservations about what makes a hero, et cetera, you know.
I love that, how you would throw him a character and then he would put it through his flow chart and it would be like, yes, no, yes, no. Yeah. And then he would tell you if he would do the character.
Yep. But unlike Rom.
All you people that like Squirrel Girl better thank Steve Ditko.
Yeah. Unlike the Rom stuff that he was doing at the same time, these issues that he did, I think he did like six and then another six maybe after a few in between, they don't have like P. Craig Russell doing the inks. And, you know, the ROM issues had some inkers who were excited to ink over Ditko, and it showed. These ones are more straight up Ditko, a little more faithful to his, at that time, breakdown type art. So, you know, it's sparse 80s-ish kind of Ditko, but it's still Indiana Jones and it's still fun and you know exactly what's happening. It's still smooth storytelling. It's just not the lush modern.
I think a million years ago in Comic Link, I may have bid on a page that Steve Ditko drew from Indiana Jones, having a memory. The problem is that the price is just, it's hard for me to justify. I mean, they're worth what they're worth, but they're worth to me what their market worth is to the world. So they usually get passed on. But I do remember a long time ago when I was still kind of fighting and thinking about that stuff. It had been a long time ago trying to be like, yeah, I get a page of that. It's also the price for a page that, I mean, he always does a good job, but clearly this wasn't his heart's desire, you know what I mean, too. So it felt weird spending a lot of money for something that he just was turning in as a job and not like his, this is my thing, like a Spider-Man or even those old myth, the horror ones, the Flop Sweat and all that would felt more personal. I mean, I loved all the Chuck Norris and the Karate Commandos and that stuff, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Those are great comics, but
that came after this.
I don't know. The price point for that stuff is deep, in my opinion. But like I said, they're worth it. Get it. Get your bag, as the kids say, but too pricey for Andy.
Well, the thing to remember is this isn't an omnibus. This is a deluxe hardcover, so set your expectations up appropriately.
There were 34 issues of the series, I want to say, so maybe it's 17 each or something like that.
Well, it says book one includes...
I think they'll put the movies in and stuff.
Yeah,
in
it has the Marvel Super Special, 18 and 30.
Okay.
The adaptions of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom.
Right.
And it has issues 1 to 16 of the Further Adventures.
Okay.
And then, and then book two will have Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yep.
And then they'll have 17 to 34.
All right. So they still split it in half, though, pretty much. Cool. A way to break it up.
Well, I've not purchased it yet, but I think I will once the other shipment of books I have. I think I will purchase that Micronauts Epic Collection to find out how an Epic Collection that only covers 9 issues. I got the first volume. The last one only covers 9 issues, but it's the same thickness of the other ones. Like, and I'm like, what is in there?
What's the story there? Like, your book is ending soon, and they're like, oh, let's just give it some big issues.
Let's put 200 pages of extra material. I don't know. I'm curious, but I have to wait for my first batch of books, including volume one, to make sure it's appropriate. And then I'll order the other volumes of the Micronauts one. Because I haven't read that comic since it came out either.
I was just about to say, I would love to do a reread of Micronauts, including the Steve Ditko annuals.
Excellent work.
Those were great
Steve Ditko. Yeah.
He did a great licensed
book stuff is excellent work. Yeah, I always wondered about whatever happened to all that Charlton pages and everything. Those should come up too, but I saw the Marvel stuff. I saw the DC like Hawk and Dove pages, stuff like that, but it was weird. I mean, obviously it's personal stuff. I never saw. I mean, now that he's passed, I'm sure it's around, but I was always like, I never saw a lot of the Charlton pages. I don't know if there was some story up with that, or maybe the places I was going didn't move Charlton original artwork, but it's just something I don't, for as many comics as that company put out, you think there'd be a ton of original art from it, but wherever those dealers are, they don't cross my path.
Yeah. Did they return his art to him?
Like I said, I know so little about, I just don't see it. I mean, I'm not saying I've never seen it, but
yeah.
I feel like the volume for, because people forget how Charlton put out a lot of comics. Like,
yeah, yeah.
There should be a ton of that somewhere in the world.
There's those stories of Ditko using original art as cutting boards.
Maybe those Charlton stories.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I could see. But I also was just figuring there'd be other, you know, lots of people work for Charlton. So I just figured I'd see that more places. But also, like I said, maybe it's specialty stuff.
Maybe they had like a warehouse fire or something, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People only want Marvel, DC, and Archie. I see more Archie than I do Charlton.
Archie's old.
It is, but they never had the width of the catalog. I mean, they had a lot of titles, but not like Charlton did. So, plus, I know some guys that buy Archie pages, so maybe that influences my thinking.
Hey, I got a quick hit for you. There is a new limited series written by Christos Gage, at least the first issue. I don't know if they're going to do a different creative team each issue, or if it's just a different story each issue. But the creative team for the first issue is Christos Gage and Edgar Salazar, and it's called Civil War Unmasked. And they're basically doing untold stories from in between the pages of 2006's Civil War event.
It's like, a weird idea, and I'm definitely not the audience for that.
No, neither of us.
Ditto, right?
Not what I was scrambling for. Remember when comics were super decompressed? What if we really decompressed them even more?
Remember when heroes fought heroes more, and there was other weird stuff going on?
Like when we stretched Stark stuff out an extra,
I'm like, no,
20
I'm
issues that didn't need to be stretched out. Yeah. Let's make that 20 into 40.
What's crazy is it's because it's the 20th anniversary of Civil War this year, 20 years ago. like the difference between 1960 and 1980 is the difference between now and when Civil War came out.
That is ridiculous, because it seems like 60 to 80 is like some monumental jump.
The whole Silver Age and the whole Bronze Age. I mean, what is... But I'm here to tell you,
comics had appreciated the way they did from the 60s to the 80s. I'll tell you that one.
As much as I don't really care for the premise of this limited series and don't really care to read more about what happened in the Civil War, this issue actually was kind of fun because it has Iron Man and Bishop, I don't know why, traveling to the days of future past future.
Oh, brother.
Okay? And even that's like, this is ridiculous. But what was cool was seeing Iron Man take on the unstoppable ex-villain from the future, Nimrod. It's a 13-page battle between Iron Man and Nimrod is the bulk of this issue. It kind of had that Axe of Vengeance kind of fun thing where it's like Iron Man doesn't know Nimrod, Nimrod doesn't know Iron Man. They kind of give him their best shots and try to figure each other out on the fly. 13 pages of this story were entertaining. I can tell you that. That was kind of fun. When it comes out on the Unlimited, make a note of it, give it a check out, and flip through it and be like, that's fun.
It reminds me more of the Secret Wars one where they were doing all those crazy mashups and everything. the
Weird World.
Secret Wars. Not Secret Wars.
Yeah.
One, two, or those other ones for people that are confused thinking, I don't remember that during Secret Wars 2. I just remember the Beyonder in his white suit and Jerry fancy Gerson. Hair.
All right, is that another episode of Marvel Noise?
Oh, I just wanted to put in a quick bit.
All right.
About Daredevil Born Again Season 2.
Okay, I finished watching.
That off.
Me too.
And me too. I don't think it necessarily like redeemed itself and totally became its own show.
I didn't
like it.
Nobody won at the end. It felt so, and there was no final, they did the Kingpin Daredevil confrontation like two or three episodes before the last episode, and then they didn't have a big confrontation at the end, really. Like, it was...
I mean, spoilery, they kind of did, but it's also weird that it's like, let's go to court, and then, like, out of that, it's like, everything resolved itself, and I'm like, really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It was strange, and I definitely, like, I kept on giving them a chance, or like, the city's bad and all this stuff, and then I'm like, well, maybe we'll see all these vigilantes, like, that the Kingpin is talking about. I don't know, maybe that's supposed to make it more scary that the Kingpin is, like, saying, oh, we got to do all this stuff, and he's really only going after one guy, but he's telling everyone it's 50 guys or whatever, and you're supposed to think, wow, he's really deluded. But I kept on going, well, show us the guys, then show us the other guys.
I heard that the actors that play Daredevil and the Kingpin went to the brass and had them change the ending because they thought it should end a different way. So there may be some of that at play. Maybe that's why nobody won.
It's hard to say, because I can't say it was a great show to begin with, so maybe the other ending was... terrible. I don't know.
Skip to the end, because I'm going to spoil a bunch of stuff, everybody.
Yeah.
So please watch it. But the killing of Vanessa was so disappointing, because they were one of the more interesting couples on the show, and getting rid of her just made him kind of a character I felt I'd say. No, Vincent D'Onofrio is a great actor. Like, he does a lot with it, but getting rid of her, their dynamic made him 50 times more interesting a character than just, oh, now he just wants to go out. You know what I mean? I felt that was a key relationship that,
she died in the comics, though.
But in the comics, they never had her with this fun dynamic of being like the co-boss.
They used her differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it just made it was a fun, like, not that there haven't ever been that sort of criminal power couple, but it was a more, I felt it was a fresher take than some of the other stuff in it. I also felt that Karen seemed a bit nerfed in this thing too. Like, I just felt, what was she doing half the time? And I like how she would wear wigs, but she didn't dye her hair at any point. So some kind of basic things when you're on the run that I think you, I don't know. Who was it? James Gandolfini's kid. He did a great job too. Like, the acting, I thought, like, no knock on anybody. Yes.
The actors,
everybody, the acting, really.
The yeah. storytelling, the acting, the directing, all of that is fine. It's just, there's nothing fun about it. Like, it sucks all the fun out. Everything I like about superheroes, comics, and Daredevil is kind of sucked out of this, and leaves us with the just the gritty stuff, which, if it's not played off of the other swashbuckling-ishy kind of stuff, it, like, to your point, Kevin, I would have preferred to see the overarching Kingpin story, but at least every two episodes, there should have been a bit villain that gets taken down. Like a villain of the month or episode, or maybe they could do it like the old Bam-Pow Batman episodes and do it over two episodes was a new villain and he gets taken down. And then the next two episodes is another villain. And because there just wasn't enough there.
Or I also like during the Bendis run when, like, the Stilt Man shows up and then he's like, oh, I can't operate in the city. And you just see this Stilt Man, like, getting out of there. I'm like, just anything where I'm like, it didn't necessarily have to be like a big thing. Just other people are like reacting and being like, oh, this is too much. I can't believe Fisk is doing that. I'm leaving the city.
I think your point to the fun is a good one too. Like,
yeah,
the Muse stuff just tired. I felt like the serial killer super villain thing, as you guys know, is just a pet peeve of mine to begin with. So to have that so omnipresent, and it's also just dangerously close to Bullseye, you know, another like kind of psychotic serial killing super villain. And I'm like, what, like you say, the Jester, the Stilt Man. There's some fun Daredevil villains, Batman. Oops, how did I slip that in? But they could have had some of those. The Eel, the Gladiator is always, they set him up in either last season or the Netflix or somewhere that was
Netflix.
Opaque reference to the Gladiator. Just something to mix it up instead of just the, it's all dreary, we're going to just murder loads of people, which I'm always so on in a superhero context. I feel like it doesn't always work great piling up bodies because, you know, superheroes are best when they're a bit more silly or it's just the whole world is at stake type of thing, not we're just going to kill a lot of people on screen. Yeah, I mean, they set it up too that the hand might be able to bring people back from the dead or things like that. So it could be, they could, that stuff from the Netflix that they haven't touched yet that they can bring back the Beast and the hand. And
Foggy's going to come back, but it's going to be wearing a white suit, like Electro.
Well, I figured Vanessa might come back.
Oh, yeah.
They bring Foggy back. Unless that guy puts on a bunch of weight, I am really going to throw a fit. No more thin Foggies.
All right. Should we make that another episode of Marvel Noise?
Sounds good.
All right. You'll hear from us again when we have enough noise to fill an episode, right?
That's right, Super Steve. You're not hung up by your ridiculous end phrases anymore, are you?
All right. Keep an eye out and both ears for indie comic book noise and maybe even some noise about the distinguished competition. Anything's possible now.
Anything's possible. Yeah. Yeah. Send in ideas that are easy to implement and old, you know, come on back, bring them back. Dave or backwards Dave. Oh,
all right. Excelsior, upward and onward. Later.